Messiah, Obama, perfection. He gave us Obamacare and he never makes any mistakes because he's totally perfect. He's a demigod and he puts his pants on two legs at a time. And he walks on water. He is the Messiah. He is the second coming. Obamacare.
You can scream and shout with all your might.
Oh, you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, and motherfucking moan.
Dig in your heels and hold on tight.
You can shove your opinion up your ass. That way Obama's cock has something to keep it company. Don't forget my friends and my enemies, the ever-present, the most likely, the third possibility, you are wrong and I am right. Yeah, because that's how we roll. This is part two of a two-part series. If you did not listen to the previous episode, you might want to go back and listen to it. We're talking about the book, the D-Text book, and all sorts of shit that you didn't know because you're an idiot. And we're talking about it right here on Stating the Obvious podcast, which is the weapons platform from which I launched the cruise missile of my intellect. Homes in on it, destroys stupid motherfucking statist all over the place. Left-wing statist, right-wing statist, no-wing statist, bi-wing statist, trans-wing statist. Whatever kind of fucking statist you are, from a-statist to bi-statist to poly-statist to tranny-statist, it doesn't fucking matter. We are here to just beat the living shit out of you and then mow you down with a machine gun. Because you're a fucking statist, and you're a total piece of shit. Alright, we're picking back up. As I said, we are reading from and discussing a book called The D-Text Book. We are currently on page 182, and if you enjoy this cast and you want to hear more from the book, then go back, listen to the previous podcast. Here we go. Modern technology is the reason you're depressed. Thanks to the miracle of technology, you can do all your Christmas shopping online and avoid the fat lady ramming her cart into you at Target. You can buy a home theater system and get your cinema experience without the toddler kicking in the back of your chair. You can even stream the movie so you don't have to go to the video store. Even when you do venture out into the sun, you can browse the web on your phone instead of interacting with the strangers on the bus or in the doctor's waiting room. Dealing with those people is now an old world inconvenience, like having to wash your clothes in a creek or waiting for a raccoon to wander by the outhouse so you can wipe your ass with it. The problem is that annoyance is something you have built up a tolerance to, like alcohol or a bad smell. The less you are exposed to it, the less you're able to handle it when it inevitably comes up. And it is inevitable. Society is, after all, nothing more than humans peacefully cooperating despite our mutual distaste for one another. But dealing with incompatible people takes a set of skills that you learn from practice. Something that people used to get plenty of back when they knew their neighbors and every purchase required a verbal exchange with a human. A lot of old friends first met due to those random encounters. But not these days. Now, talking about this actually brings me to a story I was going to tell. I wasn't going to tell it in the context of this book, but this is perfect. Talking about people's inability to have social skills and interact with other humans. All right. I'm sitting in this restaurant with a friend of mine, and I'm talking about how Hillary Clinton's going to be the next president, and if I'm wrong, I'll lick your ass in the middle of the avenue during rush hour. And I'm, you know, probably getting loud because I do that. This may be hard for you to believe. Sometimes I can project my voice and be a little bit loud. And I have a general rule of thumb when I'm in a public place like a restaurant. I'm not ever trying to be obnoxious, but at the same time, if people overhear my conversations and disagree with it, I really don't give a fuck. And, well, I'll get to that in a minute. So anyhow, we're sitting there, blah, 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 and at some point, this guy from the booth next to us gets up and comes around and starts talking smack about how he, and full disclosure, by this point, I had had two beers and at least 3.5 margaritas. Also, I really didn't give a fuck about anything he had to say, and thus, I honestly have very, very vague memories of what the conversation actually was. But his point of his is that he didn't want to hear this, and there were some old people at the table next to us, which at one point there were. They were long gone at this point, and they were offended by what I was saying. And I basically just blew him off because I didn't give a shit. Now, this is a perfect example of how people can't fucking cope with other people because they have no social skills. Had this person simply, and they'd been there for a while, so it had this person, hold on, I'm trying to, you don't want to know what I'm doing. It's not that. I don't have hysteria. It's a reference from the previous episode. You have to go back and listen to it. Had this person up on my first offense, you know, the first time I loudly said something like, I'm going to lick somebody's asshole or I'll fuck the shit out of her or whatever the fuck I... And again, I really have no recollections much of what I said either. But had the first time I said something he found objectionable, had he just popped around the table and said, hey man, you're being really loud, could you just keep it down a little bit? I would have been, my response would have been, oh hey man, I'm sorry, yeah, absolutely, I know I get loud sometimes, which I actually said in the thing, I said, hey, am I talking in my outside voice, because I know I get loud. I acknowledged him that I got loud, because when it first started, I didn't even, he was trying to be a douchebag. It took me a while to figure out he was a douchebag, because I really wasn't in the mood to be confrontational. It's just, oh, this guy's telling me I'm being loud. Okay, I'll tone it down. You know, I'm sorry about that. But he kept fucking coming at me. And it's like, oh, wait. I mean, if you want to be a douchebag, we can be douchebags. And this is the point. This is the complete fucking lack of social skills. Had he simply just said, hey, man, you're a little loud. Could you just tone it down? I would have said, oh, shit, I'm sorry. I'm being really loud. I didn't mean to be that way. I get loud sometimes. I apologize. I'll try to keep it down. If I start hollering again, man, just pop around the corner and wave your hand at me. I would have been completely willing. I mean, it's not a big deal. But instead, the fucking douchebag sat over there for however long he sat there and listened to me, getting offended by me, building up all of this anger, until finally he can't stand it anymore, and that's when he comes around and has to be confrontational. That's a fucking lack of social skills. It's because you're a fucking emotional retard. Now, as for these old people who may or may not have been offended, I don't know. I never looked over at them. Kind of the same thing goes for them. Okay, they're old. This goes back to something I talked about many times in the past. You know, we have all these laws. We have to protect old people from getting scammed and protect old people from people calling them on the phone and taking advantage of them and protect old people from having their checking accounts stolen. If old people are so goddamn smart, why do they need so much protection? Okay, these old people been alive for 80 fucking years or whatever. If they can't say, excuse me, Shunny, but you're really loud. Could you hold it down? Well, then fuck them. Fuck them. Okay? Those old people, their Social Security, I'm paying for that. Medicare, I'm paying for that. Medicaid, I'm paying for that. They may have assisted housing, I'm paying for that. They get all kinds of senior discounts from the government, from services, from companies. I'm subsidizing all that. Okay? Yeah, you know, if you ask me politely, just if you just politely say, hey, you're being loud, could you tone it down? I have zero problem. Absolutely zero problem. I will first to admit to you, yes, I am loud. I apologize to you for being loud. I know you don't want to hear my conversation. I will do my best to shut the fuck down. And if I bother you again, just wave it. Just let me know. But when you sit there and you stew in it, or, you know, they just sit, if they really were getting offended by what I'm saying and they don't say anything, well, fuck them. Fuck you. You're a goddamn statist. I'm subsidizing your fucking life by paying taxes. Go fuck yourself. Get some goddamn social skills. If I'm being loud in the restaurant, just fucking say something the first time I'm loud and say it nicely And if you even make it funny, I might even buy you a fucking drink to make up for it. But you don't have any fucking social skills because you're a goddamn fucking cell phone retard. So go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself. Okay, let's go back to reading. I love how that story just perfectly fit right in there. Social media somehow results in fewer friends. Let's say you get drunk, take off all your clothes, use a magic marker to cover your naked body with graphic descriptions of what you'd like to do to Michael Bubbly's pretty mouth, I don't know who that is or whatever, and then you have someone take your picture. How many people on earth do you trust with that photo? A Cornell University study showed the likely number is 2. That's how many people the average person says they can confide in. About a quarter of the respondents said they have no one. Those numbers are down dramatically from just 25 years ago. That's right, in an era when communication was harder, when there was no Facebook or even cell phones, when you couldn't seek out like-minded people on message boards, they still had more close friends than we do. Gee, the internet destroys people's ability to make friends and socially interact with other people. Where have you heard this before? I wonder if there's any asshole, bastard, cock-sucking, piece of shit, anarcho-capitalist podcaster that uses bad language all the time who might have been saying this for years. I wonder. If there was, I bet that he's been podcasting for 10 fucking years, and I bet his podcast is called Stating the Obvious. You could find it at CYNLIBSOC.com on the motherfucking interwebs, where he will lay down CLSology on your bitch asses, and where he doesn't give a fuck if you're his friend or not. You don't want to be friends with him on Facebook? Oh, I bet he doesn't give a fuck. You don't want to follow him on Twitter? Oh, I bet he's not going to cry himself to sleep. I bet you can go fuck yourself. Yes, you can. Oh, you can get a vibrator and you can just fuck the shit out of yourself. Just fuck yourself. Just fuck yourself senseless. Oh my God. And then you can go on Facebook and you can post a goddamn selfie of you with your fucking vibrator fucking yourself. Yeah, you can do that. Yes, you can.
That's because the internet is great at giving us what we think we want. Wait, what I think I want is sex with the CSU women's volleyball team, and I have not been able to figure out how to get that from the internet. If I could, however, it would change my view of the internet. All right, that's because the internet is great at giving us what we think we want. Easy friendships that don't require anything of us. Shallow relationships with people who laugh and play multiplayer games with us, but don't know our deepest secrets and shames and weaknesses. These are the people you never have to do favors for. The people who will never call you out on your bullshit. The people who will never stage an intervention. If they get angry, they might insult you, but they can't criticize you. They don't know you well enough to offer anything like brutal honesty. That's the kind of thing that only comes from having experience with highs and lows together, in that magic realm where hugs and handshakes and fistfights can occur. And in fact, you have evolved to need physical contact. When someone speaks to you face to face, what percentage of the meaning is actually in the words as opposed to the body language and tone of voice? According to one study, it's 7%. Now, I have refuted this. It's hilarious that this book, which is supposed to be about things you don't know, is repeating this bullshit about how 93% of communication isn't verbal. That's not true. I don't give a shit if you agree or not. I'm right, you're wrong. I've refuted this already. I'm not going to talk about it now. Go do some fucking research. Try thinking. I know it's difficult, but fuck you. The other 93% is nonverbal. No, we don't know how they arrived at that exact number. They must have a machine or something. So the authors of this book acknowledge that, yeah, we have no idea where the number comes from. We're just going to mindlessly believe it. Because even though we're writing this book, we're still a bunch of fucking statists. But you don't need a study to tell you that. A guy doesn't wait for a girl to tell him verbally that she likes him. He knows from the sparkle in her eye, her posture, and the way she grabs his hair and shoves his face into her boobs. Email loses all of that. One study showed that 40% of email messages are misunderstood in some way. Again, this is where I'd like to see references to all these studies. I'm not saying I disbelieve that there is a study that found 40% of emails are misunderstood, but I would like to be able to follow up and see the studies for myself. I've talked about this a lot before. Whenever some moron says a study says such and such, you've got to look at, okay, who did the study? Where was it done? What was the methodology? Yada, yada, yada. All of this stuff is that just, oh, study. It's, I just watched the South Park episode about child abducting, you know, and the TV commentators come on and go, a new study has shown that the most likely people to abduct their children are their parents. And all the parents in South Park, oh my God, we might abduct our children. The study says we're going to do it. You know, it's just like, oh my God, a study said something. It must be true. It's in a study. Fuck. People have got to learn to think, man. You've got to fucking learn to think. Where are my notes? All of your senses evolved to adapt to face-to-face interaction. You pick up signals from real-world contact, detecting and adjusting to other people's moods on the fly, subconsciously reading 10,000 subtle facial cues. Kids born without this ability are considered mentally handicapped. Again, when I say that using medicated generation, interact with your cell phones all the fucking time, you can't interact with real people. You're socially retarded. It's like this person I encountered in the restaurant. He's fucking socially retarded. He had no clue how to deal with a person who is being loud at the booth next to him, other than bottling up his rage and then finally exploding and having me have to make fun of him on the podcast. He had no fucking clue how to deal with another human because he's a fucking emotional social retard from looking at the goddamn cell phone all day. While people who have lots of it are called charismatic and become movie stars and politicians, it's not what they say, it's this energy they exude that makes us feel good about ourselves. It's not magic, it's biology. We are social animals whose brains ooze doses of happiness chemicals, when a bunch of us gather and cooperate and high five. It's why humans need parties and concerts and churches and protest and sports. Again, I've been saying this for years. Where I was like, oh my God, anarcho-capitalism, everybody's going to kill each other. No, they're not. Everybody is not going to fucking kill each other. We are humans. We are social animals. We enjoy each other's company. What's leading to people killing each other is the fucking all the cell phones and the Facebook and shit, which is destroying people's ability to interact with other people in real life. Again, all these shoot. We had this new shooter that I don't know anything about other than everybody got their panties in a wad about the Confederate flag, which isn't actually the fucking Confederate flag because none of you know anything about history. That's in this book also. You know, it was, I don't know, it was some young white kid, right? Okay, how much time did this little white kid spend on Facebook? How many actual real life friends did he have? How much time did he spend outdoors exercising? How much medication was he on for his personality? None of these things need to be discussed. It's just, well, there is a Confederate flag. Holy shit. Southern people are racist. Where am I at? I'm on 185. This is under the heading, things that can secretly turn you into a bad person. Now, this first one is going to sound really familiar because, oh, who talked about this years ago? Who actually got the study, the actual study? It talked about this years ago. I think, in fact, this study is available for download from Cynical Libertarian Society website. If I remember, I'll put it in the show notes. I'll put the link in the show notes. Going green. According to a study published in Psychological Science, if you're environmentally friendly, you're more likely to be a selfish, lying, cheating, stealing douchebag. Behavioral psychologists call it moral balancing. The theory goes that the better you are in one way, the less you feel like you have to be good in others. What makes Going Green special is that with more types of good behavior, soup kitchen work, charitable donations, puppy counseling, there's an obvious long-term return on your investment, free rolls, tax breaks, and snuggles, respectively. With ecologically conscious behavior, there's a less tangible reward for you. So to compensate, you give yourself more breaks when no one else is looking. You cut the plastic six-pack holder up this morning, after all. Don't you deserve to hit a few hobos with your car? Now, they're being facetious, but again, I talked about that study. They gave people the opportunities to lie, and they gave people the opportunities that meet. It's me moving around the microphone. Randy's giving me dirty looks. They gave people the opportunity to lie or tell the truth, and they gave people the opportunity to steal money or to be honest about money. People who identified as being green, people who bought more green products, all this other stuff, were more likely to lie, given the opportunity, more likely to steal money, given the opportunity. It's in a study. It was done by scientists. It must be true, unless you deny science. Well, you're not one of those science deniers, are you? Because all scientists believe in global warming. And if you don't believe in global warming, you deny science. Magnets. It turns out our moral compass is as easy to fool as a non-moral compass. Scientists at MIT discovered this by pointing a magnetic wave behind the right ear of some presumably deeply weirded out volunteers. The participants then demonstrated an impaired ability to tell the difference between right and wrong. Again, I would love to see this study, like what exactly they did, how this was conducted. Again, I'm not disputing it. I would like to fucking know. Specifically, the study found the subjects, after being magno-wiped, were much more receptive to immoral situations as long as there was a happy outcome that justified the immoral means. The really creepy part? It was as fast as it was easy. The researchers found the subjects could have their morality wiped in half a second. I would submit most statists are like this naturally. I mean, like Obamacare. That's a happy outcome. Why, look, I have insurance now. I don't give a fuck about everything else. All I care about is I have a happy outcome. I am getting Obamacare. I can get my free birth control pills now. Fuck everybody else. Fuck the children who are going to get the cost of all this as it all rolls downhill. Fuck the people who lose their insurance. Fuck the people who don't want insurance. Fuck everybody except me, because I want my free birth control. Your own facial expressions, not that kind of facial. Everyone knows that. That was me ad-libbing. Everyone knows that happiness makes you smile, anger makes you frown. And louder than expected farts make you raise one eyebrow and point at the guy next to you. Well, scientists have found that your facial muscles are actually controlling your emotions more than you think. Which, again, we knew this already. If you smile, you will become happy. It's, again, the body leads the mind. The mind follows the body. The body follows the mind. The mind follows the body, right? You're feeling depressed. You're feeling shitty. Exercise. Move. Smile. Dance. By altering the state of your body, you can alter the state of your mind. This, again, for those of us non-stupid, this is a known fact. For example, I do it very often here just recording the podcast. When I'm sitting down, like I'm doing now, I'm sitting on my little football recording this episode. When I'm sitting down, stating the obvious episodes tend to be, not always, but they tend to be more mellow, a little better spoken, slightly less use of the word fuck. When I'm standing up, that's when, if you're listening to an episode where I'm like screaming as loud as I can, you know, like fuck you cunt and fucking die in every sentence, I'm probably standing up and I'm moving around a lot more. And so my posture, my attitude, what I'm doing with my body during recording the episode has an effect. It's not the only determining factor by any stretch, but it does have an effect, right? When I'm feeling shitty, you go do some yoga. When I'm feeling shitty, go outside and I go walk downtown. I walk around and I come back and I'm feeling energized. When I'm feeling shitty, go take a bike ride. You know, where, and yes, when you smile, you make yourself happier. It's rocket science. It's not rocket science. I don't know. But now here comes the scary part. If that's not weird enough, that's not weird. But here comes the frightening part of the fact that your facial expressions control your emotions. Nicole Kidman's weird new face is indirectly responsible for the discovery. Botox has been making women look sexier since the 1980s, assuming you're sexually attracted to smooth skin and people with awesome poker faces. See, in addition to paralyzing your face's muscle tissue until wrinkles disappear, Botox also firms up everything else on your face until people can't tell whether you're smiling warmly or weeping in terror. But hey, it's not like that conveying emotion is your job or anything. Well, according to a recent study, again, I'd love to know the study, injecting Botox into your face not only makes you look like you have no emotions, but actually inhibits your ability to feel them at all. We tend to think of the relationship between our emotions and our faces a one-way street, but apparently your brain likes to check in with your facial muscles before deciding what emotion it should be feeling at any given moment. Even if you have every reason to be delighted, if your brain checks in and you're not smiling, you'll still be unhappy. We need a complex series of interactions to occur involving our body, hormones, and brain to truly feel something like happiness. And it turns out that the part involving our facial muscles is way more important than previously thought. You know, it's interesting. I couldn't read that sentence looking at it, but I stopped looking at the book and read it from memory. I was fine. Again, these are psychological things. Anyway, researchers found that the people who'd frozen their faces with Botox had lost the ability to feel strong emotions, or in some cases, pretty much any emotions at all. Again, I'd love to know this study. I suppose I could do that whole Google thing and try to find it. And actually, let me write this 186. Oh, sorry, I'm leaning into the microphone, my bad. Let's see if I can find that. All right, what's next on this show? We're going to page 192. Oh, God. Oh, man. All right. Here we go. This is going to take us into the domain of me falling over off the football onto the floor. Okay, and I'm trying to balance. This is going to take us into the domain of when people say to me, but great one, you know, if only you would use less bad language, you might be able to convince people of anarcho-capitalism, but you're doing such a disservice to the anarcho-capitalist movement by using bad language and making fun of trannies and all the other evil, terrible, racist, sexist, homophobic, unfair things you do. And this is why I say to them, and I say to you, I say to everyone, I am not here to persuade anybody. I'm not here to convince you. I'm not here to convert you. I'm not here to educate you. I'm really not even here to entertain you. I'm here doing this entirely for my entertainment. If you enjoy this podcast, that's great. I'm happy you're enjoying it. If you learn anything, that's great. If you are persuaded or convinced or converted, that's great. That's fine. If you disagree with me and you ask intelligently, whatever, it doesn't matter. Myth. Debates are one of the most important forms of reasoning we have as a species. The truth. We don't argue to find the truth, we argue to win. Our innate urge to argue isn't grounded in a desire to discover the truth of the matter. It is grounded in our desire to win. Think of the last big argument you had with someone who was so blatantly wrong. How did the conversation end? Did the person sheepishly admit that maybe their conspiracy theory about no planes being present on 9/11 had a few holes? Of course not. They moved on to the next point they could argue and continued believing in ridiculousness. That little tactic is called the argumentative theory of reasoning, and it's present in every one of our minds. Humanity doesn't argue in search of better understanding, but in order to dominate someone else. Again, have you ever tried to argue with a statist and explain that without the government, people could in fact build flat places on the ground called roads? Have you ever won that argument? Have you ever won that argument? Have you ever heard a statist go, oh yeah, you're right. Wow, if Obama wasn't murdering people in foreign countries with flying robots, and if Obama wasn't bailing out the banking corporations, and if Obama didn't force people to buy Obamacare, and if homosexuals didn't have to get permission from the government to get married, well, people could still operate asphalting equipment and make roads. Wow, you're right. We could make roads without the government. Have you ever won that argument? Has that ever happened in your life? No, it hasn't, and it never will. It never, never fucking will. It never will. And that's why I'm not here to persuade and convince and convert people, because I'm not stupid. I'm not stupid enough to believe I can do that. I'm not stupid enough to believe anyone can do that. I've said it before, I'll say it again. The only person who can convince you is you. I had to convince myself to become an anarcho-capitalist. I had to make that journey, that intellectual journey, through all this stuff. Again, I've said before, I was a liberal Democrat, I was a conservative Republican, I listened to Rush Limbaugh, I was a right-wing libertarian, I was a minarchist, and finally an anarcho-capitalist. I had to make that journey. Yes, I got information from other people along the way, but there was no this point where somebody was arguing with me and suddenly I was like, oh my God, you're so right. I'm wrong. No, it's a transition and you have to make it yourself. Back to reading. While blindness to reason may seem like a cognitive flaw, it's actually a trait that has survived through years of evolution because arguing, regardless of how right we may be, has taught us how to bully other people into caving to our will. It's rarely in our best interest to admit we're wrong during an argument, even when the opposing side has piles of proof that we are idiots. Back when our brains were evolving, the truth was never the point, at least not as far as our ability to survive and procreate was concerned. In that context, the point of every debate was being the victor. And since that's when your brain was designed, that's what it's good at. The myth. Everyone's out to get you, and they'll lie at the drop of a hat. Now, where have we heard this one before? Everybody's out to get us. Why? If there were no government, everyone would run down the street murdering and raping and burning things down because everybody's evil, everybody's out to get everybody else. It's going to be this Hobbesian paradise where life is brutal and terrible and short because everybody is such a terrible, terrible person despite their 12 years of public school and their 18 years of having a mother. They're just, everyone is a fucking murdering, rapist, arsonist. And that's why we've got to have the government. Because if there were no government, everyone would kill each other. You know, like we did back in the days before there were a government. We all killed each other all the time. And yet, somehow, the species is still here. But we killed each other all the time. So we killed each other, but we still managed to reproduce even though we were all dead and on fire while being raped because Obama hadn't been born yet. The truth. The world is nice. You're the jerk. We didn't just pull that number out of our ass. At the University of the University of something in Germany, researchers asked a group of students to rate the likeliness that a group of strangers would screw them out of money they were supposed to share with them. The students assumed about half of the strangers were trustworthy enough to be honest and split the cash. But when it came time to actually share the money, about 80% of the people actually shared, which means that 20% of the people are douchebags, which means that 20% of the people are the ones who had run down the street raping, killing, murdering. Now, what have I said before? What have I said over and over and over and over and over, Tom Blue in the face? Anyone who says, but without the government, everybody would run down the street killing each other and murdering and raping and pillaging and burning, the people who say that are engaging in the time-honored tradition of projection. The people who say that are the people who would do that. And think about it. Doesn't it come in about right? Of all the people you know, if you're an anarcho-capitalist, whenever things go on, about probably what? About 20% of the people you know start off with, if there were no government, everyone would kill each other. Yeah, yeah. They're the ones. And no, everyone wouldn't kill each other because that 20% would very quickly be exterminated by the 80% who would be defending themselves. This would be the best thing that can 20% reduction in the population of the planet, and not just getting rid of 20%, but getting rid of the scumbag 20% who are the most statist people in the planet. The people who would actually kill other humans if there were not a government to give them free Obamacare and free birth control and free food stamps. This is probably the 20% of the people we most want to exterminate. This is the 20% of the people who need most to be thrown out of the gene pool. This is the 20% who are most in love with the government. All right, 80% of the people actually shared. Yes, because even with statists, most statists are statists not because they've ever thought about it, but just because it's easy. They just don't know anything else other than kissing the ass of the government. They've never thought about it, and they never will. But even most statists, when it comes down to it, are not bad people. Most people have no desire to kill other humans, except for that 20%. Most people have no desire to steal from other people, except that 20%. Most people have no desire to randomly shoot people in a Burger King or a church or a fucking college campus. It's just that 20%. That dreams of Obama's cock in their mouth and is just so in love with the state and the social justice warriors and all this other shit. Over time, this self-fulfilling model begins to affect how you interact with people every day. Have you ever been in an argument about religion or racism or whether Edward is better than Jacob and immediately felt it stall when one of you suspected the other might be doctoring facts? No amount of proof will ever sway either side in this case because your brain turns off as soon as you assume that the opposition is lying. Which, I mean, is true. That's one reason I don't have conversations with statists, because I know they're lying, whether by choice or design or by accident or ignorance. And yeah, I'll be the first to tell you, if you're a fucking statist and you start telling me about how Obamacare is providing healthcare, I'm turning you off because you're an idiot. You're turned off. If you start telling me how nobody can build roads without government, you're off. You're done. Start telling me about how, if there are no government, people would kill each other, and done. You're off. Of course, you don't have to think they're lying to be impossible to convince. Thanks to the fact that the myth, you are a reasonable, rational human being who only wants the facts. The truth. Where have you heard this one before? The truth. You disappeared up your own ass a long time ago, and you're never coming back out. Well thought out, articulate opinions swaying the base belief of others? Great, in theory. Now try to think of a single instance in which that's ever occurred. Now we're back to, but great one. If you just used less bad language, you could convince people. No, goddammit. No, you stupid motherfucker. No, I can't. I cannot convince a motherfucker anywhere on the planet Earth of a goddamn thing. And I am not dumb enough to believe it. It doesn't actually matter what facts any lawyer has to present, what talking points a politician chooses, or even what conclusive proof we present in this section labeled the truth, because if you've already made up your mind about a subject you feel passionately about, there's not much anyone can do to change it. That's all thanks to a hardwired amenity your brain has called confirmation bias. Where have we heard about confirmation bias before? Gee, I wonder if that asshole bastard podcaster at Stating the Obvious has ever talked about confirmation bias. Oh, I bet he has. God damn it, I love it when I'm fucking right. This is confirmation. This book is pretty much confirmation bias for me. I'm reading this to you because this is confirming everything I fucking said about confirmation bias and your inability to be convinced by facts. Yes, don't sit here and fucking deny confirmation bias. You're using it right now to deny what I'm saying is true. I'm using it right now to substantiate that what I'm saying is true. Confirmation bias, we are fucking awash in it. It's everywhere. We're fucking drowning in confirmation bias. And yet you fucking statist out there, you think you're so intelligent and so rational, so smart, and why, yes, Obamacare is a great idea because all the numbers add up and Obama's a financial genius and it all makes sense and the corporations hate black people and patriarchy and you're a social justice warrior and by golly, hell yes, gay people should get permission from the government to get married because the government owns their fucking bodies and you are just fucking drowning in the confirmation bias and you can drown in my motherfucking cum as you suck my dick and swallow the fucking load. Think of it as your brain's slick PR agent. Every time you, and we're talking to you here, every time you encounter information that runs contradictory to your beliefs, regardless of how irrefutable it may be, your mind will spin the facts in any way it can to keep you shielded from humiliation. Now this goes to why I've said, I talked about this at length in the past, I have said that we, as anarcho-capitalists, we are superior. Again, I mean superior. The way Hitler thought Aryans were superior to Jews, that's the kind of superiority I'm talking about. We anarcho-capitalists are mentally superior to statist. Because we, in order to be anarcho-capitalist, have had to put aside confirmation bias. We all grew up in a statist society. We all grew up with statist belief systems, whether they were left-wing statist or right-wing statist, whether they were Christian statist or Muslim statist or Hindu statist or Buddhist statist or atheist statist or any. We all grew up with all sorts of statist bullshit in our heads, and we had confirmation bias keeping us in the statist mindset. For us to leave that behind and become anarcho-capitalist, we had to admit we were wrong about almost everything we've ever believed. I have been wrong in the past about almost every, I mean, there's a couple, like oxygen is good, right? That's been pretty fucking consistent. I have been wrong about almost every fucking thing I have ever thought in my entire fucking life. But I have been able to overcome the confirmation bias in order to gather evidence and adjust my opinions and views and worldview to conform with the truth of the non-aggression principle and property rights. And it is in the process of understanding, acknowledging, accepting that I have been wrong about almost everything I have ever thought. It is that which allows me to be right. That is what allows me to have always been right, to always be right. It is that which you, as a statist, completely lack. You don't have the ability to overcome confirmation bias. Now, am I saying that I can always, every single fucking moment of my life, overcome confirmation bias? No. But you see, unlike you, I'm aware of its existence. And that's the first step. I've said it a million times. You can't stop being a slave until you acknowledge you're a slave. You can't stop being an idiot until you acknowledge you're an idiot. You can't stop being a statist until you acknowledge you're a statist. Obviously, the fervor of your beliefs will determine the amount of confirmation bias. That's why you can argue with a friend that Rick James did, quote, play that funky music, unquote, and still feel okay about it when you're proven wrong. But when the topic is God or gay rights, your entire belief system is called into question, and no amount of evidence or eloquence from the other side can ever make you stop and say, maybe I'm completely wrong about this. Yes, no amount, nothing will ever stop you from saying, well, of course gay people need permission from the government, because you cannot accept that asking permission from the government affirms that the government owns you. The idea that gay people and non-gay people and cis people and tranny people and all these other made-up genders you have, the idea that these people own their own bodies and can just fucking get married anytime to anybody they want, you can't comprehend this because your fucking mind view, your worldview is hinged upon the government owns your body and the government can control what you do. And anything that refutes that, you're just not going to listen to it because you're a fucking dumbass. When the proof runs contradictory to conviction, our brains either justify how both proof and belief can exist together or throw a temper tantrum and lash out at the facts for being so mean. That, of course, is known as being a social justice warrior. Or yeah, well, you're racist and sexist. Okay, great, I'm racist and sexist. Explain to me why people need permission from the government to get married. I can be racist and sexist all day. You're not actually refuting my argument. You're just a fucking dumbass. Page 196. You're kind of a dick. Science has stepped in to measure, with precise instrumentation, exactly how bad we are at knowing where we rank on the spectrum of people who are worth a damn. A study at Cornell found, over the course of two experiments, that of the participants who said they would donate to a charity, 80%, only half actually did. And those who donated gave only half as much as they previously said they would. But the amount of money donated in reality was extremely close to what the participants predicted others would contribute. In other words, we know that people are awful, we're just not people in our minds. We all picture ourselves as members of an elite moral minority. Another study presented two tasks, one easy, one hard, to participants. The catch being that the task they didn't take went to somebody else. Most took the harder task when it was all theory, but if they knew they actually had to carry it out afterward, they took the easy task for themselves and pawned the hard one off on another person, even if they were told that other person was a 10-year-old girl. Yes, because you see, you cocksucking fucking statist, you care about the children so much. Oh, you care about the children. Oh, the children. You so care about the children. That's another study. I'd love to find this and hear it. Randy, guess what? Oh, we're going to have to go over. Unless you want to do a part three. Yeah, I know you don't want to do a part three. So much truth here. There's so much truth. And hold on, I'm reading my notes. I'm trying to figure out what I'm supposed to pick up. La 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 la. Yep, we got that. All right, here we go. At the very beginning of his crazy rant-filled downfall from a few years ago, Charlie Sheen went on the radio and gave this advice to fellow addict Lindsay Lohan. Quote, work on your impulse control. Just try to think things through a little bit before you do them, unquote. Now, it's easy to pass that off as just the hilarious pot kettle black ravings of a crazy person, but look closer. You have two people engaged in exactly the same behaviors. In Sheen's mind, Lohan lacks self-control, but he controls himself. He makes decisions about what he does, cocaine and hookers, while she just does things because of her addictions and personality flaws, cocaine and grand theft. When she participates in a drunken high-speed chase on a suspended license, it's just her impulses controlling her like a puppeteer. He, on the other hand, is simply exercising his God-given free will when he does a suitcase of cocaine with porn stars for 36 hours. Laugh if you want, but science says that bizarre double standard is at work in all of us. Again, think about your average statist here. According to a study conducted by a facility at the Kellogg School of Management, most of us believe we can resist temptation better than everyone else, and in fact, overcommitting our impulse control may be the most important factor in creating an addict. For example, while watching the nicotine-saturated movie Coffee and Cigarettes, smokers were given the goal of refraining from smoking. The catch was they got to choose where they could place an unlit cigarette during the movie, in another room, on a desk in the same room, in their hand, or in their mouth. Those who opted for higher temptation, the hand or the mouth, got a higher payout. It was like a Game of Thrones episode with smaller stakes. Participants who thought they had a higher level of control, that is, the ones who were more likely to keep the cigarette in their hand, also gave in to temptation more often. The more confident you are in your own ability to resist temptation, the more likely you are to set yourself up for failure. And so what they're saying there, because that seemed a little unclear to me, so the payout, they mean, so if you put the cigarette like in your mouth, you got $20. If it's in your hand, you got $15. If it's on the table, you got $10. If it's in the other room, you got $5. So if you successfully didn't smoke the cigarette, you got that amount of money. And this is just like, everyone knows this, right? So, you know, fat people, step number one. And again, I'm not fat. I could always stand to lose a little weight. But remember, let us use me as the example. Those of you who have listened to this podcast for a long time know I used to go through Oreo cookies, the ones with the chocolate stuffing. Oreo cookies. I could eat a package a day. And I would do it. Randy's seen me do it. Why? Well, they're in the fucking house. If I'm in the house and there's a package of Oreo cookies, I'm going to fucking eat it. Temptation. It's right there. When I stopped buying Oreo cookies, I stopped eating Oreo cookies. Those of you who have listened, you know I came on one day, I said, I'm not going to eat Oreo cookies anymore. I have still, since that day, not had one Oreo cookie. Now, do I still eat chocolate? Yeah. Do I sometimes eat other cookies? Yes, absolutely. Not claiming perfection here by making the point. So it's just like a friend of mine, he's the same way with chocolate. He's like, I cannot have chocolate in my house. If there's chocolate in my house, I'm going to devastate it. You can take an entire chocolate cake, put it in his house. This is not bullshit. That cake will be gone in 24 hours. I don't give a fuck how big the cake is. You can make the biggest fucking wedding. Doesn't matter. It does not fucking matter how big the cake is. If it's chocolate, it's gone in 24 hours. he just doesn't let chocolate come in the house. Same with me. If there's some Oreo cookies come in my fucking house, I'm just going to slam my face into the fucking box and eat them all. Let's see. If we have a government that has unlimited power and can take money away from people and control people's behavior and kill people in foreign countries with flying robots, are we going to be able to resist using that power to do things? You just see, when you give Obama all this power, you think he's going to resist that temptation? Gosh. Suddenly, when you think about things like that, giving people large amounts of power over other humans, otherwise known as statism, doesn't really sound like such a good idea anymore, does it? Those researchers also found that, without consciously thinking it, we assume that our own future is a wide open horizon of possibilities. Where will I be in 5 years? Who knows? But we think the futures of the people around us are basically set. Steve will definitely get a promotion. He's really smart. Tammy is going to get pregnant. She's a whore. In other words, we're the only ones whose day-to-day choices actually matter. That's something we're naturally inclined to think, and if you don't fight against it, you might just end up in jail getting self-control advice from Charlie Sheen. All right, page 198. Ooh, we're almost done. Only one more. Only have one more note. Page 206. It says shit. Oh! This one is great, because here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins, for those of you don't know anything about it, we love our bicycles. There's all these bicycle riders around here who, man, they got their fucking Dayglow vest with the reflectors, and they got their little spandex, and they got their helmets and all this other shit, and they look so fucking stupid. God, they look stupid. Safety equipment. We have nothing to fear but fearing for our lives. The myth. Safety equipment makes you safer. The truth. Safety equipment turns you into a reckless maniac. It's something called the Peltzman effect. Quote, the hypothesized tendency of people to react to a safety regulation by increasing other risky behavior, offsetting some or all of the benefits of the regulation. Unquote. It's not just a wild theory. The Highway Loss Data Institute bore it out in its 10-year anti-lock brake study. Its research showed that a person in an ABS vehicle actually has a 45% greater chance of dying in a single vehicle crash than someone without ABS. Science's explanation: unskilled drivers drive more aggressively thanks to their false sense of security. Again, look at all the people. Oh, I have an SUV. I have a four-wheel drive vehicle. Of course I can drive really fast across the snow and the ice. Of course I can drive through those flooded streets. I'm in a SUV. I have four-wheel drive. That's real common here in Colorado. It's like, I have a four-wheel drive. Okay, motherfucker, I'll be pulling you out of the ditch later. The same thing happened in 2006 when a researcher in Bath, England posted the results of a study showing that people in cars are more likely to hit bicyclists wearing safety equipment such as helmets. Motorists drove an average of 3.35 inches closer to the test bike when the rider was protected. The sight of safety gear apparently turns off the brains of nearby drivers. Either that or the test subject looked really terribly, murderously dorky in the helmet. The D textbook is what it's called. You can get it at finer bookstores, Amazon.com, and this place called the Public Library, where they have these things called books there. And since your tax money is already paying for the public library and all the shenanigans that go down there, don't go buy the book. Go to the library, get the motherfucking thing for free. Now remember, it's not really for free, because you paid for it. Randy, hit the music. Let's get the fuck out of here. It's just a